You are listening to Expanding Horizons, the podcast of the Unitarian Church of South Australia, a home of progressive spirituality and free religious thought and action since 1854. Views expressed in these podcasts are those of the speaker and are not intended to represent the position of the church itself or of the worldwide Unitarian Universalist movement. For more information, visit unitariansa.org.au.
For the new year, just days old, we light our chalice, symbol of faith, perseverance, and hope, in astonished thanksgiving and irrepressible praise. We acknowledge this land that we meet on today as the traditional land for the Kaurna people, and we respect their spiritual relationship with their country. We also acknowledge the Kaurna people as the custodians of the Adelaide region and that their cultural and heritage beliefs are still as important to the living Kaurna people today. We also pay respects to the cultural authority of Aboriginal people visiting and attending from other areas of South Australia. Welcome to our service of worship this morning. I'm Jenny Dyster and I'll lead the service today. We are an inclusive community and welcome everyone, regardless of their gender preference, identification, ethnic identity, or religious persuasion. It doesn't matter whom you love or worship, you will be respected in this space. We hope you can stay for coffee, tea, and conversation. You're welcome to take a chair outside to sit and chat if it's not too warm out there. We've had a few wet days and cool days, so this is a welcome change. If you stay inside, try to be very mindful of social distancing and wearing a mask until you're seated and enjoying a cuppa. And of course, we can spread into the Catherine Helen Spence room as well as this space. My topic for today's service is patience. It's patience with a C, a virtue we sometimes have reservations about. If I say I'm waiting like patience on a monument, you can be pretty sure that I'm going to lose it sooner rather than later. Patience is for the invisible and forgotten, the left behind. Viola uttered these words when she was pining for Orsino in Shakespeare's Twelfth Night. She pined in thought, and with a green and yellow melancholy, she sat like patience on a monument, smiling at grief. Not a happy girl, or not even obviously a girl, she was disguised as a boy at the time. Sitting like patience on a monument didn't get her anywhere very fast. We now come to Candles of Sharing. It's our tradition to share the significant events of our spiritual lives in an open forum of fellowship. I invite you now to deepen and bind that relationship by sharing any recent event that has been significant in your life. Light a candle from our chalice and tell us briefly about it. You may prefer to light a candle in silence. Listening with an open heart and mind is the most important part of this practice. And I'll light the first candle. The final candle represents all those things we chose not to share that remain silent in our hearts. May all these things we've shared be honoured by this beloved community. The reading today comes from Priyasha Hishek Sharma, the author of the book The Himalayan Master and the Sixth Sense. When he was asked, what role does patience play in meditation? This is what he had to say. Patience is meditation in practice, and meditation is patience in cultivation. When impure but honestly committed Valmiki was unable to recite the name of Ram correctly, the guru commanded him to carry on reciting the mara until he returned. Valmiki did not ask when he would return. This is called surrender and commitment. He kept on reciting the name until his guru actually returned to find him metamorphosed into the saint Valmiki. And this is called patience. When surrender meets patience, meditation graduates to the class of superconsciousness. Similarly, people flocked to young Buddha with countless metaphysical questions. He promised them to answer each of the questions on condition that they stayed with him for a year. All left, except a few. The year came to an end, and the Buddha reminded the disciples to ask what they'd been looking for a year earlier. They smiled and moved on with Buddha without anything to ask. This again is about patience, timing, and direct experience. When genuine disciples had the patience to actually execute Buddha's teaching in their lives for a year without asking, the answers arrived to them directly, without the need for verbal intervention by their master. Moral of the story, there's always a moral with Indian teaching. Patience and regularity are the two inalienable virtues of success in meditation. Now, meditation is a harmonious state of mind. We're in harmony with our thoughts, good and bad, and that's it. When thoughts do not matter much to make us either happy or embroil us in dejection, when we observe and feel that our act of being aware is in no way determined by thoughts, then we're in a meditative state. Meditation creates a calm space in which questions and problems are not tackled purposefully, but paradoxically, resolutions can result from meditation. And today's meditation is taken from the writings of Stephanie Dowrick. Reflection is learned in silence, and it reveals silence to us. Silence is not emptiness, it's the container within, in which fullness is found. One of the most agonizing effects of mental illness can be the loss of silence, the constant talk and chattering, noise and unsettling thoughts. From the Tao Te Ching, we learn the highest form of goodness is like water. Water knows how to benefit all things without striving with them. In choosing your dwelling, know how to keep to the ground. In cultivating the mind, know how to dive in the hidden deeps. Reflecting, we may choose not to judge. Reflecting, we may choose not to speak. Reflecting, we may deepen our listening. Reflecting, we may remember how to endure our own uncertainty. Reflecting, we may choose to speak lovingly rather than bitterly. Reflecting, we may remember that not reacting can also be an action. Reflecting, we allow ourselves to be surprised. Patience is a virtue, a state of high moral excellence, or is it? Maybe it's just a saying. Maybe it's something that's said by others when they want you to settle down and not make a fuss. You've just rung the RAA because your car won't start. The operator says, "We're a bit busy this morning. It might be a while before we get to you, but we will get to you eventually. Just be patient." It's not how the operation works. You give your details and the operator says either we'll be with you shortly, you'll get an SMS when the service is on the way, or if it's busy, the operator will tell you that the waiting times are approximately an hour or an hour and a half. And if you're at home or at work, you can get on with chores, knowing you'll get a call a few minutes before the RAA arrive, and being gainfully employed, you avoid the stressful condition of being impatient with its attendant feelings of agitation or anger and distress. We may not be convinced that patience is a virtue, but we all recognise the drawbacks of impatience. It implies impotence, a lack of control over a situation, frustration, and impatience and frustration are as misguided as they are miserable and self-defeating. They can lead to rash and destructive action. Kicking the tires or pounding the windscreen will only hurt your toe or your fist. You don't win at chess or indeed any other game by being impatient. You don't succeed in teaching your kids skills or manners by being impatient. And you don't make the RAA man arrive any faster. Gandhi said, To lose patience is to lose the battle. If we venture into things without proper study or waiting for the correct moment for action, we lose control. So why don't we want to be patient? Is it because waiting is inherently difficult? Well, I think it is. It takes time to learn to wait and to believe that you'll be rewarded. Once you do believe in the reward, your patience grows. Patience can be regarded as a decision-making problem. Eat up all the grain today, or plant it in the ground and wait for it to multiply. As children, we have a strong tendency to disregard long-term rewards. Are you familiar with the Stanford Marshmallow Experiment? It was a series of studies on delayed gratification led by Walter Mischel in the late 1960s and 70s. It was conducted on hundreds of 4 and 5 year old children. It involved a simple binary choice: eat this marshmallow or hold back for 15 minutes to be given a second marshmallow. Having explained the choice, the experimenter left the child alone with the marshmallow for an agonizing 15 minutes. Follow-up studies carried over the next 40 years showed that the minority of children who had been able to hold out for the second marshmallow went on to enjoy significantly better life outcomes, including higher test scores, better social skills, and less substance abuse. Now, all sorts of odd conclusions have been drawn from these experiments because white middle-class kids did rather better than anybody else. Was it because they're morally and intellectually superior, or because they had already been taught to trust the universe? This was tested in 2012 when the experiment was rerun with a twist. Before the test, some kids were subjected to games in which promises were kept, and some kids were subjected to games in which promises were broken. The children primed to trust were 4 times more likely to win the extra marshmallow than the others. You don't have to grab a reward unless you're worried that it will disappear. However, patience involves much more than the mere ability to hold back for some future gain. Exercising patience can be compared to dieting or growing a garden. Waiting is involved, but one also needs to have a plan in place and to work at that plan. And so when it comes to others, patience amounts not to mere restraint or tolerance, but to an active, complicit engagement in their struggle and welfare. Patience is a form of compassion, which, rather than disregarding and alienating people, turns them into friends and allies. It looks very much more like a virtue, even though it's not listed in the traditional 7 adopted by the church fathers in the 1st and 2nd century. The original 7 virtues consisted of the 4 classical ones, prudence, justice, temperance, and courage, and 3 theological ones, faith, hope, and charity. Now, what could be more reasonable and helpful? I'd like a slice of all 7, please. But what happened a few hundred years up the track in the early medieval period? They were edited. New versions were called the cardinal virtues because the church determined that the original list was not fully accessible to humans in their natural state without assistance from God. Aurelius Clemens Prudentius was a 4th century Christian governor who wrote a poem entitled Psychomachia, or Battle or Conquest of the Soul, which pitted the 7 virtues against the 7 capital sins. Dualism raises its ugly head. Good virtues versus evil vices. It was enormously popular, and it helped to spread the idea of holy virtue through medieval Europe. But now, look how suddenly the emphasis was not on reason, but on struggle and guilt. And yes, sex is at the top of the list now in place of prudence. Prudence was the charioteer of the classical virtues because it guides the formation of the others. Now it's sex and guilt. No wonder the comic song in Camelot sends up the 7 deadly virtues and illustrates their lack of palatability. If charity means giving, I give it to you, and chastity is only for your mate. Remember that one in Camelot? Pope Gregory only made virtue seem less attractive. Patience gets its own billing, but it's got a very different spin. Patience or forbearance from the Latin patentia, endurance, submission, and ultimately to suffer. It can be defined as the quality of endurance or equanimity in the face of adversity, from simple delay or provocation to tragic misfortune and terrible pain. Patience might be awfully worthy, but one would rather not have to think about it, let alone exercise it. Now, we do value equanimity in the face of adversity when the adversity is unavoidable, but prefer action when it's not. In an emergency room or waiting for an ambulance, one does not wish for patience. What one wants is swift, effective action. Today, more than ever, patience is a forgotten virtue. Our individualistic and materialistic society values ambition and action above all else, whereas patience involves a withdrawal and withholding of the self. And these things are only getting worse. In a study of millions of internet users, researchers found that just within 10 seconds, about half the users gave up on videos that had not started to play after 10 seconds. What's more, users who had better internet, faster speeds, clicked off earlier, suggesting that technological progress is actually eroding our patience. Waiting, even for a very short time, has become so unbearable that much of our economy is geared to eliminating dead time. Is it possible that restless impatience is an expression of manic defence to prevent feelings of helplessness and despair from entering the conscious mind by distracting it with the opposite feelings of euphoria, purposeful activity, and omnipotent control? But even in pre-modern, pre-technological times, the egocentric predicament made it hard to exercise patience. It's easy to blow your own thoughts out of all proportion and lose perspective over a situation. For example, I could be impatient in a checkout line, largely because my time's more valuable than anyone else's and my purpose is more worthwhile. I know nothing, of course, about the other unimportant people in the queue. I could be doing a better job at the till, so I shoot dagger eyes at the cashier, failing to recognise that he or she is coming at it from a different angle, with different skills and abilities. In the end, my frustration in itself becomes a source of frustration as I vacillate between biding my time in the queue, or changing queues, or even abandoning shopping. So I commend patience as a virtue. Not because it's inherently appealing, like courage is, justice is, but rather it saves us a lot of pain and can save us from fretting and making ourselves a spectacle of discontent and a vexation to everyone else's spirit. I recall being in India, and this is where we want this one, and we decided to post books home to avoid excess baggage fees. Now, how long did it take to locate a post office? It was easier than it is here, because they have post offices, not retail stores. But how long did it take to process the packages? Well, that was another story. The packages were wrapped in calico, and then they were hand-sewn with exquisitely fine, even stitches. And we were there for 2 hours for three packs of books, two bound for Australia and one for Sweden. We were ushered into a shady courtyard to wait. We watched the gardener chip away at weeds with his adze. We were offered cups of masala tea for 2 rupees each. We watched chipmunks running along the high wall. And on our way back to the homestay, we were treated to yet another example of patience when we met an ambassador taxi. Our auto rickshaw man nattered to the driver of the taxi and we were ushered into a shop. The auto rickshaw was balanced on 2 wheels and leant into the shop so the ambassador could pass through the laneway unimpeded. Now, those who don't love India will argue that nothing works there because people are too patient and too lazy. But let's not go there. You can't shift cultural practices and attitudes easily from place to place. All places have their own history and inherit conditions and habits from the past. In our culture, we undervalue patience to our detriment, and it shows up in stress. Stress undermines our health, our happiness, and our relationships. Stephanie Dowrick is an interfaith minister who, as a writer, was very interested in what she termed the humane, not heavenly, not cardinal, the humane virtues. She devotes about 50 pages to restraint, which of course is the virtue most aligned to patience. She writes that restraint begins with a moment of intention. She recalls that when she was ill, a gardening friend came to work on an overgrown patch in which some timid and precious plants were in danger of being choked. A few days later, she was up and about and admiring the handiwork of her friend, and then she noticed something. The woman had severely cut back a native, which had taken 2 years to get anywhere. In that moment, she said, "I have a choice. I can choose to speak to my friend honestly and tell her she's cut back a plant that I would have left alone. That is, after all, the truth. Alternatively, I could thank her for the work she's done and ignore the fact she did it her way." Reflecting that if she'd done her best for someone else and been found fault with, she would have felt hurt, she chose to ignore the spindly native and just express gratitude for the kindness and the pleasure it brought. It so happened the little plant exploded into flower 6 months later very lavishly. That's not the point. Even if it had died, Stephanie would have saved her friend some heartache and had the chance to express love and appreciation. Now that's a very simple example of the value of patience or restraint. We all live through big stuff, storms and their aftermaths, and I'm sure that you can recall occasions upon which holding back from taking action for the sake of someone else has expressed your love just as powerfully as stepping forward and doing something. Long-term happiness is more important than short-term satisfaction. Restraint cannot be practiced without some degree of maturity. When young children are growing up, when they're growing as they should, they're naturally impulsive and exuberant. Warm and genuine feelings arise from this very vital base, exuberance. Taking a back seat or waiting a minute can seem impossible to a toddler. But as they develop awareness of other people's needs, they develop empathy. It's a long, slow process civilizing the kids. Restraining them is not the same as teaching them restraint. But we also need to work on it ourselves all our lives. Restraint offers a space between intention and action. It offers the opportunity to protect others from actions or reactions that should only exist in our own imagination. We're going to lose it occasionally, but by exercising patience with ourselves, we can keep carving out that space between impulse and action and free ourselves from the tedium of stale or habitual responses. Reminding ourselves that we have choices freshens up each new moment, and we can continue our growth into the fullness of who we are, muddled, foolish, complex, creative, imaginative people who can hopefully see the same qualities in others.
Well, we hope you enjoyed this Expanding Horizons podcast. These podcasts are the intellectual property of the presenter. They can be used only with the express permission and appropriate acknowledgement of the presenter and the podcast used in its entirety. This permission can be obtained by emailing unitarianSA@bigpond.com. Please feel free to leave a comment or visit us on Facebook or Twitter by searching SA Unitarians.